Radio Prague News.
Prime Minister Andrei Babish and his Bulgarian counterpart Boyko Borisov have stressed the need to find a reasonable compromise on migrant issues in the European Union. Presidential challenger Jiří Drahoš has said the Czech Republic should be able to handle a limited number of refugees. And President Zeman has indicated he would favour a minority government formed by the ANO party. Czech Prime Minister Andrei Babiš and his Bulgarian counterpart Boyko Borisov have stressed the need to find a reasonable compromise on migrant issues in the European Union. During talks in Sofia on Monday, Prime Minister Babiš said he was relying on Bulgaria, which took up the rotating presidency of the European Council, to resolve the thorny issues of migrant quotas. Babiš said a mandatory redistribution of refugees was unacceptable and divisive. Prime Minister Borisov said his country's priorities during the presidency would be security, stability and solidarity. He further expressed support for Bulgaria's ambition to join Schengen. Jiří Drahoš, challenger to incumbent President Miloš Zeman in the second round of presidential elections, has stated that while he is against a dictate from Brussels regarding the number of migrants the Czech Republic should accept, he feels that the Czech Republic is strong enough, both from the administrative and security aspect, to take in a certain amount of refugees. Mr. Drahoš made the statement in an interview for Novinky.cz. The incumbent president has a strong anti-migrant stance. President Miloš Zeman has indicated that he will give the ANO party, which won the last general elections by a broad margin, a second chance to form a government. In a debate on TV Nova on Sunday, the president said he would prefer a minority cabinet made up of ANO party members, supported by the Social Democrats and Communists or the Social Democrats and the Freedom and Direct Democracy Party. Mr. Zeman said he would leave it up to the party to decide whether Andrei Babiš should head the next cabinet after he was stripped of his immunity and released for criminal prosecution. Babiš, who has been promised a second chance to form a cabinet, has indicated that he would bow to the will of the ANO party and might leave the top post to a party colleague if such a step would secure a viable government. The damage caused by the fire that killed four people at Prague's Eurostars David Hotel on Saturday night will exceed 20 million crowns, according to a preliminary estimate released by fire crews which took part in the rescue operation. The results of an investigation as to what caused the fire should be known in a matter of days or weeks. Among the dead are a 21-year-old German man and a 20-year-old woman from South Korea. Police are still searching for the identity of the two women who succumbed to their injuries in hospital several hours later. American singer Lenny Kravitz is to give a concert at Prague's O2 Arena on June the 2nd, the agency Live Nation reported on Monday. Tickets will go on sale on January 26th. Kravitz last performed in the Czech Republic in 2014 within a promo tour of his album Strut. The concert attracted 10,000 fans. A hat made in honour of Jiří Raška, the 1968 Olympic ski jumping champion that is the highlight of the 2018 Winter Olympics collection, is reported to be hugely successful. Jan Došlý, marketing director of Alpine Pro, said that the hat was practically sold out and the company was scrambling to put several thousand more pieces on the market ahead of the Games. The hat, dubbed Rashkovka, closely resembles the hat in which Raška won his first gold in ski jumping at the Olympics in Grenoble in 1968. Jiří Raška was named the best Czech skier of the 20th century in a 2003 poll of journalists and members of the Czech Skiing Association. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Tuesday should be partly cloudy to overcast, with the day temperatures between 2 and 6 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franíková. Coming up in today's program, investigation is underway into the cause of a deadly Prague fire which claimed four lives. Spending watchdog criticizes the Ministry for Regional Development. And later on in the program, we meet Ladislav Hornan, a successful executive in the UK who in the 1980s found himself locked up on spying charges in his native Prague. All that coming up, so please stay with us. An investigation into what caused a fire at a five-story Prague hotel Eurostars David on Saturday is continuing. Four people died, two on site and two later in hospital. What remains unknown is what caused the blaze, and there are questions whether the alarm system worked properly. Jan Wellinger has the details.
The fire at Eurostars David Hotel, located on the Prague embankment a block away from the National Theatre, was reported just after 6 p.m. on Saturday, and first responders were at the scene within minutes. By then, however, parts of the building were already ablaze. Eventually, 17 firefighter units were involved in getting the blaze under control. The spokesman for Prague's fire brigade, Martin Kafka, described the situation as it developed.
When they arrived, firefighters were struck by the intensity of the fire. The first responders were there within 3 minutes, but it was blazing in part of the building. They had to begin battling the fire, which was spreading, and to get people out of harm's way.
Images from the scene showed guests at the hotel sitting on window ledges on the top floor, waiting to be rescued. Afterwards, numerous clients at the hotel who escaped from inside and had witnessed what was happening reported they had never heard a fire alarm. Milan Markovic, a visitor from Montenegro, told Czech Radio that he and his wife only realized they were in any danger when they heard sirens of arriving vehicles outside.
It was too many smoke, you know, you didn't hear an alarm at all.
Around 40 people were evacuated from the building in the space of around 10 minutes. Dozens were given medical attention on site. Around 9 people suffered injuries, including 2 of the firefighters. Worse, a 22-year-old German man and a 21-year-old Korean woman lost their lives, and 2 other foreign nationals, both women, died later in hospital. On Sunday, clients who had been accommodated elsewhere for the night by the hotel were not allowed to return for their belongings, and as investigators assessed the damage, working with several possible scenarios as to the cause of the tragedy. Early reports suggested the problem may have been a circuit in the air conditioning system, but nothing has officially been confirmed. Meanwhile, a preliminary estimate of the damage caused by the fire has been put at around 20 million crowns. Václav Vlk, a lawyer for the hotel, rejected the notion that negligence had in any way played a role.
This is a large hotel belonging to a large hotel chain, so it's standard that everything should be in order.
That said, the police are investigating the tragedy as a possible criminal negligence threatening the public. It's not the first hotel fire in the Czech capital, which ended in tragedy. In 1995, Prague's Hotel Olympic also suffered a fire where 8 foreigners lost their lives.
Jan Wellinger with that report. The Czech spending watchdog, the Supreme Audit Office, has submitted a caustic report on the accounting abilities of one of the country's key ministries, the Ministry of Regional Development. It says cash flows worth billions of crowns was not properly registered in the books. Chris Johnston has more.
On its own, the Ministry of Regional Development is not one of the biggest spenders in the government. The budget for this year comes to 5.6 billion crowns. But in spite of that comparatively small figure, the ministry is a big hitter when it comes to spending and administering cash earmarked for it by other bodies. It has oversight of administering and managing the lion's share of Czech EU programmes, as well as drawing up and spending on its own programmes, such as tourist promotion. And the current government has earmarked a broader and more crucial role for the ministry as the future focus for strategic investment in spending, for example, on houses for the elderly and starter flats for young people. But the Czech spending watchdog, the Supreme Audit Office, has released a highly critical report of the ministry's ability to keep track and account for its own cash flows, saying that billions of crowns under its administration were not properly accounted for in 2016. In total, the watchdog said that around 8 billion crowns in spending was not properly accounted for or explained in the closing accounts, and significant discrepancies were apparent. Yana Gabrielova is one of the spokespeople at the office and explained some of these basic flaws that the watchdog says it discovered when it looked over the books from February to August last year.
The Ministry for Regional Development, in its overall review of cash flows, said that the incoming cash increased by 3.5 billion crowns, when in fact there was a cut in funding of 2 billion crowns. The checks also showed for a considerable time the ministry did not declare in the overall state budget all of the funds available. Instead, these funds were put on its own bank account, independent of the overall budget.
These off-budget funds came to around 13.7 billion crowns by the end of 2016, according to the spending watchdog. And it complained that some spending was simply not accounted for at all in the end-of-year balances. The watchdog added that its past complaints and observations about the ministry's practices had only been partially addressed. All in all, it concluded that the ministry accounts failed to give a proper picture of what was going on. The minister during the period in question was ANO's Carla Schlechtová, who is still in the current government but has moved on to the higher-spending Ministry of Defence. The ministry has defended itself, saying that some of the criticism stems from its different approach to some accounting issues, as well as other differences of opinion.
Chris Johnston with that report. Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. In the latest in his series of interviews recorded in London, Ian Willoughby meets Ladislav Hornan, a Prague-born man who found himself locked up in the 1980s Prague despite being a UK citizen. That's in this week's edition of One on One.
Ladislav Hornan, who's chairman of the British, Czech and Slovak Association, has enjoyed a very successful career and led one of the UK's top accountancy firms for many years. He came from a relatively privileged background in Prague, where his mother, Magdalena Hornanova, was a music professor and writer. Unusually, Mr. Hornan returned regularly to Czechoslovakia after emigrating in 1968. Until, that is, he spent almost a month in a Prague jail on spying charges in the mid-1980s. In a meeting room at his company's City of London building, he shared that remarkable story. But first, we discussed August 1968, when, as an 18-year-old, he was in England on a summer study stay.
About 4 days before I was due to leave, to go back by train to Prague, I saw the tanks in front of our apartment building in Jindřiška, and subsequently my parents told me not to come back. You can imagine that it was a fairly big sacrifice for my parents. I have two sisters. They were still in Prague in those days, and my parents actually sent them out as well.
You were 18 in 1968. That is incredibly young to make such a life decision.
I think when you are 18, you don't see things as life decisions, but it made a lot of sense. I was always interested in the political scene, not actually in practicing politics. So I think I understood what was going on. If you read my mother's biographies, you would understand that she and my father went through all the changes from the First World War to communism, etc. And we understood that as well. And I never had any difficulties in the UK.
How long was it before the UK began feeling like home to you?
At one level, it was very quick. I'm one of those people, I'll enjoy what I do, enjoy my life. I never had any struggle, always worked, always studied. On the other hand, it was a little bit lonely, so I married very young. And at work level, in those days, things were a little different. There was less tolerance for foreigners, but I knew how to deal with it, and I knew how to make sure that it doesn't stop my progress.
Did you know a lot of other young Czechoslovaks at that time here in London?
I knew a lot. 68 was in itself a very interesting time because many young people like me made a decision and maybe a little bit older than me, or most of them a little bit older than me. And they very quickly went to universities, established themselves. Basically, UK supported them to settle in the UK. But there were some people, including a very dear friend of mine from Prague, that decided to go back. So there were those people as well that couldn't handle the change.
There was a previous generation of emigres who came here 20 years earlier, roughly. Did you have much contact with them in your early days in the UK?
Okay, there was maybe a group in the late 40s, and there was also a group in the late 30s. Yes, I would meet some of them in the Czech Club, one of the places that we would visit to meet people and have drinks, and you could see especially the old pilots in those days were sitting there and enjoying their drink, and it was great to be able to talk to them.
When did you first return to Prague after that period?
I actually returned fairly early on because I was a very enthusiastic skier. You could say that I was an expert skier. I missed it. Because I married early, I organized, or my mother organized, immigrant passport. So I was able to go back to Prague first time, I think, in 1969. And that was in itself a very interesting time because I was there in Václav Square after the Russia-Czech Republic World Cup second match. The Czechs won, and it was quite interesting to be with the masses of people on Václav Square.
And were you constantly coming and going? This seems to me quite unusual.
I can't say constantly, but I did like my skiing. It was a lot cheaper for me to go skiing in the Czech Republic, although there were terrible queues, so I gave that up later. But I was going there quite regularly until 1985. In 85, there was a big event, and I couldn't go anymore.
What big event? Do you mind me asking?
I was put in jail.
Tell us more.
This has never been aired in public, although many of my friends know. My father was not well in 1985. He had a cancer operation, so I went to see him. And on my way back to London in Revolutiny, catching the CSA bus, I was arrested. I was taken to Ruzyně.
But on what grounds?
The grounds were espionage, but I must say immediately that later on, when everything was reinvestigated back in the 90s, it's documented. It was a total fabrication, but for some reason I must have been quite interesting to the Czech authorities.
Do they tell you in concrete terms what kind of spying they suspected you of?
Yes, they did. It was a really surreal situation because it had to do with one of their officials, and I went through the legal process without really any representation or access to my people in Ruzyně prison, and I stayed there about 3.5 weeks.
And how did you eventually get out?
I was released on 6th of April, 85, and on 9th of April, the UK Foreign Secretary, Lord Howe at the time, it was his first visit to Czech Republic, Poland and East Germany in 20 years. So the way I understand it, they came to an agreement that I'll be released before he actually finishes his trip.
And was it a kind of international cause that you were locked up?
No. It was not an international cause. As I say, I have not done anything whatsoever against the Czech state. Never would, never had to. By the time I was very successful, and it's quite possible they were very interested in me because my partner in this firm where we are sitting, the senior partner at the time, was chairman of the BBC, Stuart Young, and his brother, Lord Young, was in Margaret Thatcher's government, in her cabinet. So I suspect they couldn't understand how a Czech can kind of get so successful to be a partner in a city accountancy firm and with those kind of connections. But until now, I don't really know what motivated them.
Tell us about your weeks in Ruzyně, how it went, what they did to you.
At this moment, I'm very reluctant, okay? Let's start here. I was interrogated every day, morning and afternoon. There was a man in my cell who clearly was a criminal, so it wasn't terribly pleasant, but later I learned things about why he was there, etc.
Was he a kind of spy on you?
Yes, they thought that. I don't know why they would think this, because it was all fabricated, but they thought I will admit something or somehow capitulate or start talking about things that I couldn't talk about because I didn't know anything. So the interrogations, the way that the interrogations were conducted was very interesting. Of course, I was very disturbed, if you wish, and worried. I was worried about my family. I had two young children, wife. It looked all incredibly serious, and it didn't matter whether I'm guilty or not guilty. You know, the prognosis of what will happen to me were real and very serious. There were a number of incidents, the way that the interrogation was conducted with note-taking, etc., and discussion with the interrogator, or interviewer, I will call him. Nobody kind of forced me to say things. But at the beginning, it was like chats, and he would dictate the answers to a secretary, and I could see that he was putting a slant on what I was telling him. So when I tried to correct him, he would say, "Mr. Hornan changed his mind, and now he says this." So I said, from there on, "Fine, now you ask me questions and I dictate." You know, I'm well capable of that. I'm a trained professional, and I think that those people that were responsible for this thought that I was a very highly trained man. Yeah. So that was kind of a compliment, but a horrible place to make me a compliment like that.
Wow.
Yeah. And there were other incidents, but I would rather not talk about it.
That's such an amazing story. It almost feels strange to kind of go back a little bit, but I would like to ask you, wasn't it weird to be returning as a visitor to your home country for a period of, let's say, 15 years? Wasn't that a strange feeling just to be visiting?
It was a strange feeling from the point of view that I wanted to see my friends, but I knew I had to be very cautious how I talked to them. Not because I was afraid of them or what I would tell them that was wrong, but because I was living in such an incredibly different world.
Were your parents able to visit you here?
Yes, yes, they could visit whenever they want. Even to the extent that after 1985 incident, I think they were permitted to come here in the hope that they won't return. But my parents didn't want to be a burden on their children, so they did return.
Tell us about the career you have enjoyed here in the UK.
It's fairly simple. I qualified as a chartered accountant in 1978. Whilst I was in this firm, I became a partner in this firm 2 years later, which in itself is pretty unusual. 22 years ago, I became the most senior partner, managing partner, and I managed the firm for 21 years. But my specialization, my profession, was corporate turnaround and insolvency work, basically like a company doctor looking after companies in financial difficulties or helping banks to sort out issues with companies like that.
Maybe it's a kind of ridiculous question, but do you ever think about what kind of life you would have had in Prague, given how successful you've been in London?
Yeah, I don't want to offend anybody. Back in the 90s, I saw many people going back to the then Czechoslovakia. I was already a senior partner here. I never had any desire to do that. My family was here. My roots were here. To uproot myself or even my family just didn't make sense. And frankly, it didn't make any sense financially.
But did you ever think what level you could have risen to if you had stayed in communist Czechoslovakia?
Communist Czechoslovakia? Probably not. Because of my awareness, I think that would have been quite difficult to achieve. But, you know, my mother was in the Communist Party in a pragmatic manner, but that's a long story. Read her biography. So I think that I would have just finished my economic school for foreign trade, and I would probably go into one of the zahraniční obchod companies to serve there, or diplomatic service, something like that. So I'm sure that I would have had a pretty comfortable life, but that's not what I wanted.
Ladislav Hornan was Ian Willoughby's guest in that edition of One on One. And now it's time for another edition of our new series, Hit of the Century.
Hit of the Century.
Now in the series 100 Hits of the Republic, we're stepping into the second decade. Nevertheless, on our webpage, you can still vote for which of the songs from the years 1918 to 1927 that you like the best. Now, let's go to the year 1928. The Czechoslovak Republic is celebrating its 10th birthday. Thanks to this anniversary, many people realize that it's time to remember and honor those who fought for freedom and those who even laid down their lives as members of the Czechoslovak legions. Today's hit will take us back to 1917 with its story. The former Russian Empire had a severe crisis at the end of the First World War. That summer, the ill-prepared Russian offensive was faced by a newly formed brigade of Czechoslovak legionnaires. In the famous Battle of Zborov, which took place in the first 2 days of July, 3,500 Czechoslovaks stood against 5,500 on the other side. They fought heroically. Even before the battle that took place near the Ukrainian village of Zborov, two men who would later become important Czechoslovak generals, Jan Sirovy, who lost an eye, and Otakar Husák, were seriously injured during the artillery preparation. Two Czechoslovak presidents are also associated with the battle. While T.G. Masaryk watched the battle from St. Petersburg with the help of telegrams and war bulletins, Ludwik Svoboda participated in the field as a legionnaire. There is so much history, and to it belongs the commemorative composition created in 1928 by Karel Hašler, Boys from Zborov. What's interesting about this song is that it wasn't allowed to be played during the Nazi occupation or when the communist regime ruled in Czechoslovakia. The famous history of Czechoslovakia's legionaries was distasteful to representatives of totalitarian states. Fortunately for us, it's once again allowed, and therefore that much more appealing. And this is it, Karel Hašler, Hoši od Zborova, or Boys from Zborov, sung by Karel Hašler himself.
That edition of Hit of the Century. And that brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about the program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franíková. Thank you very much for joining us and goodbye.